This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Today we find that we in South Africa are very diverse. We are very accepting of everybody into this port of humanity.
That was Wendy Mbatuma, a tour guide at Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela spent 17 years in an isolated prison. Details coming up. Also, members of a U.S. Presidential Advisory Council on the African Diaspora have wrapped up a two-day visit to Nigeria. And the Republican National Convention is set to formally nominate Donald Trump as its candidate in the U.S. presidential elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. VOA's Carol Van Dam is in the U.S. state of Wisconsin in the city of Milwaukee, covering the Republican National Convention. I first asked her about the highlights from the speech delivered last night by the vice presidential running mate of Donald Trump, J.D. Vance.
Well, as expected, Mr. Vance spoke about his personal story growing up very poor in a poverty-stricken area of what we call Appalachia. And it covers about a three-state area, but it's in southwest Ohio, which is part of the Midwestern United States. Just a lot of people don't have jobs there, and they just struggle from week to week to survive. And he came from this family, like kind of a drug-addicted mother, single mom, and couldn't rely on her very much, and told that story and how he was pretty much raised by his grandmother, who was in the audience. And then he shone a spotlight on her and, you know, talked about how she was the one that made him succeed in life. And, you know, he just talked about the same themes that Donald Trump has been talking about for all this time, that, you know, we have to be tough on immigration, and that we have to be solid behind our federal forces and spend more money on that. And, you know, just basically the same exact themes that former President Trump has been saying.
Yeah, he better be in line with the president's thoughts. Otherwise, he would not be elected as the vice president.
I think that's why he picked him, because of all the candidates he was looking at, this guy is so loyal and so in step with everything that Trump has said, even though it doesn't please, you know, the whole Republican Party.
And going to the next question, Carol, did you get a chance to speak to any delegates afterwards? And if so, what were their reaction?
Yeah, we did get a chance. I went down on the floor immediately after Vance was done speaking. One delegate told me that he was happy that a veteran was coming into the White House. And then I asked him, are you a vet? And he said, no, but many people in my family are. And for me, every day is Veterans Day. And then I talked to another delegate from Nebraska who said he thought it was a very good speech and that he did a great job. And, you know, he was just, you know, happy with everything he had to say and thought it was very interesting about his personal story.
And lastly, the Republican Party platform 2024. Can you tell us a little about the lead up to the crafting of this platform?
Trump himself slashed the original speech to like three quarters of what it had been. And he basically changed what was in the policy platform. He watered down what was going to be said about abortion. He didn't want a federal ban, and he made that clear in the policy platform 2024. You know, he also changed things like the some other conservative Republicans wanted language in there about gender changing. And, you know, he didn't want that in there at all, that language. He took it out. And he's at the end of it, you know, he said, you will sign on to this platform. And the Republicans pretty much did.
That was VOA's Carol Van Dam speaking with me from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where she is covering the Republican National Convention. On the Democratic Party side, the fitness and well-being of President Joe Biden is still a major issue. The latest is that he's tested positive for the third time for COVID. A short time ago, I spoke with Patsy Wada-Kuswara, VOA's White House bureau chief, about how Biden is faring.
Well, according to President Biden's doctor in a statement released by the White House, he is experiencing mild symptoms. This is the third time that he has contracted COVID, and the White House says that he is fully vaccinated and boosted. So he is recuperating in self-isolation in his home in Delaware, but the White House says that he continues to work. He does not have a fever. Respiratory rate is normal, according to the doctor. Obviously, this happened at a crucial stage of his campaign, and we need to find out more about what is happening. And the White House has said that they will update us if there's any progress, but so far, nothing.
And calls from within the Democratic Party for Biden to step down is getting louder. Can you recap the latest prominent party leaders who have spoken to Biden?
So the calls began Wednesday with Adam Schiff. This is a prominent congressman and top ally of Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, who still holds a lot of influence in the party. Pelosi herself has reportedly spoken to Biden about the damage that Democrats could face politically if Biden remains the party's nominee. And then Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, this is another powerful Democrat, also reportedly spoke with Biden on Saturday and made the case that it would be best if Biden bowed out of the race. Here's another key development. The Democratic National Committee has delayed plans to nominate Biden in a virtual roll call before the August 19th convention because there was huge backlash from Democrats who say they need time to discuss concerns about the president.
And then the Democratic voters, do they believe he should step down?
Nearly two-thirds of Democrats said Biden should step aside, according to the latest poll. This poll also found that 70% of Americans, including nearly half of Democrats, said they were not confident that Biden had the mental capacity to be president. That is a big increase since February, when only about one-third of Democrats said they were not confident in Biden.
And is the president receptive to those calls?
Well, there is some reporting that suggests he may be more open to listening to concerns. But as of yesterday, the White House still insists that Biden is the nominee and plans to win. Biden himself has said that only God Almighty can stop him from running. And some in social media have pointed out that the president's COVID diagnosis is exactly that. Of course, this is all speculation at this point. We have not had a chance to speak to the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, about this. There was no briefing with her yesterday, no briefing planned today.
And Patsy, who might replace Biden and what would the process look like?
The short answer is we don't know and it's complicated. If Biden agrees to step aside, and we don't know if he would at this point, the most orderly scenario would be for him to endorse an alternative. Now, Vice President Kamala Harris would be a logical choice, at least financially, because as part of the Biden-Harris ticket, she would inherit campaign funds automatically. But if there's no agreement, there could be a contest in next month's Democratic National Convention from people, possibly California Governor Gavin Newsom or Gretchen Whitmer, Governor of Michigan. Those are just some names that I'm throwing out there. This could be very messy, something that Democrats would want to avoid 2 months before the election. They need to project unity. But if Biden says he does not want to step down, it's almost impossible to take the nomination away from him at the convention. He did win all those primary voters at the ballot. In the case of death or resignation or disability, technically party leadership can replace the nominee after the convention. But whether that would happen is pure speculation. I can tell you, however, that at this point, Democratic politicians, even those who are pushing for Biden to step down, say that they will end up supporting him once he is officially nominated.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara, thank you for your input.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Today, the world is commemorating Nelson Mandela International Day, designated by the United Nations to honor the world struggle icon from South Africa. Mandela was born on the 18th of July 1918 and died on the 5th of December 2013. As the world reflects on his legacy, Tuso Kumalo visits Robben Island, where Mandela was imprisoned for 18 years for his commitment to peace, equality, rights, and a dignified life for all.
People from across the world visit Robben Island daily to learn more about Nelson Mandela, a man loved by many. Madiba, as he is popularly known, spent 18 years on this island, which South Africa's apartheid government turned into an isolation prison. His crime was that he fought for the liberation of his country from the oppressive apartheid system. The island now is a museum. Visitors can see the quarry where Mandela and other political prisoners were forced to dig and the rocks they were compelled to break to exhaust their strength and crush their determination to fight apartheid. His prison cell, furnished with a small bench, a blade, a cup, a bucket for a toilet, and thin blankets, is a reminder of the sacrifice he made for democracy, human rights, and freedom. Ncedisi Siswana was also brought to this prison in the late 1970s.
It was tough because we found ourselves in an environment where the prison guards were all white and the prisoners were all black. And so the prison warders didn't treat us in a very humane manner. So we had to assert ourselves and assert our dignity, you know, as human beings.
He describes Mandela as a rare human being who did not allow his circumstances to change him.
Madiba was a person who listened even to those people with whom he disagreed. And he would always do his best to try and project humanity to the other person, with the hope that that person would reciprocate that.
Mandela's sacrifice, along with that of others, finally bore fruit in February 1990, when he was released after a total of 27 years in prison. He became South Africa's first black president after apartheid officially ended in 1994. He surprised many in his inauguration speech when he embraced his former oppressors in the new South Africa, which he called a rainbow nation.
Never, never, and never again shall it be that this beautiful land will again experience the oppression of one by another and suffer the indignity of being the scum of the world.
Wendy Mutuma, a tour guide at Robben Island, says she is proud of the South Africa that Mandela created and left for them.
Today we find that we in South Africa are very diverse. We are very accepting of everybody into this port of humanity.
As the world reflects on the icon's life, Siswana says the only way to honor Mandela is for justice, peace, and equality to reign in the whole world. Reporting for VOA News at South Africa's Robben Island, I am Thuso Khumalo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America, and for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Members of a U.S. Presidential Advisory Council have approved a student exchange deal between an American college and a Nigerian university as part of its effort to strengthen collaboration on education, health, entrepreneurship, and development between Africa and Africans living abroad. The council also visited a health facility supported by the United States Agency for International Development in the capital. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian authorities and visitors chatter with members of the U.S. President's Advisory Council on African Diaspora Engagement as they tour a healthcare facility in Karu, a suburb of Abuja, on the last day of the council's three-day visit to Abuja and Lagos. The facility is one of many supported by the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, to improve the management of childhood illnesses, family planning, immunization, and delivery. The tour was part of the Council's effort to promote African diaspora-led investments in technology, entrepreneurship, education, and healthcare delivery. Denise Laurent Manti is the Executive Director of the Advisory Council.
They're doing a phenomenal job there. It really gave us a sense of what the healthcare system is like in Nigeria. This is our first trip as a council to the continent, and we chose Nigeria for a reason. The diaspora in Nigeria is very active. They're very influential, and they're really a source of strength when it comes to our U.S.-Africa policy. And so us coming to Nigeria was very intentional.
The council was created by President Joe Biden last September to improve collaboration between Africa and its diaspora in terms of economic and social development. Akila Udoji is manager of the Primary Healthcare Center of Karu.
We are happy that they have seen what the money they have given out to us to work with has been able to do, because they have been able to assist us in capacity building, capacity in the area of trainings, equipment supply, and then other activities like the makeover of the facility.
Government official Rukaya Wamako, the Abuja Primary Healthcare Director, also spoke.
They really help us. They provide us with essential equipment, essential things that we need. They also do a lot of activities, including gender. They have really opened our eyes to understand how gender cases can be reported in the facility. Before, it was a talk of war for people to understand that they're supposed to report gender basis because of the cultural background.
Earlier, the council signed a deal for a student exchange program between Spelman College in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta and Nigeria's University of Lagos. Laurent Manti says it is a big deal.
One of our primary objectives and priorities is to promote educational exchange programs. And so in Lagos, we have the president of Spelman College. He's also a member of our council. She signed an agreement with the University of Lagos to further educational exchange programs in STEM and creative industries between those two universities. And I think for us, it's really important because Spelman College is a historically Black university. And so here we are, I think for us, promoting the importance of collaboration between African Americans and Africans.
In March, the Advisory Council adopted its first set of recommendations for the U.S. president, including the Student Exchange Initiative, advocating for more U.S. government support for Africa, climate-focused initiatives, and improving U.S. visa access for Africans. The council met with Nigerian health and foreign affairs officials during the visit before leaving the country on Wednesday. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
UNICEF and UNESCO say they have started comprehensive sex education for students in most African countries so they know their rights and exercise them after the UN agencies learned many young Africans lack knowledge that could help them avoid early pregnancies and HIV/AIDS. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is one of the countries benefiting from the UN program aimed at reducing new HIV cases by 75% among African adolescents. According to UNESCO, girls in sub-Saharan Africa face significant challenges in access to education and have the highest rate of early and unintended pregnancies in the region, which often results in school dropouts. Remy Shawa is a senior program specialist on education for health and well-being for the UNESCO Regional Office for East Southern Africa. He says about 95% of girls who drop out due to pregnancy in a handful of Eastern African countries do not return to school.
So that tells us there's really a huge impetus for us to, first of all, prevent pregnancies from occurring among this young age group. Mostly, but also that when pregnancies do occur, that we put in place measures that support the continuation of their schooling, their education. A lot of countries have policies on re-entry or continuation after pregnancy, but implementation of those policies is still a difficult thing.
Shawa says the goal is to raise awareness about early and unintended pregnancies. UNESCO has been working on a program called Our Rights, Our Lives, Our Future in 35 sub-Saharan African nations to raise awareness on the importance of preventing early and unintended pregnancies. Alan Strong, a specialist on HIV at the UNICEF Eastern and Southern Africa Regional Office, says the continent has the world's fastest growing youth population, but only 25% complete secondary education, and a quarter of all women become pregnant before age of 18.
Adolescent mothers fare far worse in terms of their health and education, and yet, paradoxically, they have so much to offer for Africa's future. And supporting young mothers not only impacts their lives, but also impacts the lives of their children. Early pregnancy often means that a girl's educational pursuits need to end. Less than 5% of girls return to school after becoming pregnant. Over 6 million girls are out of school in sub-Saharan Africa during pregnancy. And often these prolonged absences from school increase their risk of not returning at all.
Obed Masaraure, president of Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, says his organization welcomes the efforts by UNICEF and UNESCO to protect girls so they finish their education and pursue careers. He says his union works around the country to prevent HIV, drug abuse, or pregnancy while in school.
Some of these preventive measures that are being discussed in these child protection committees that are across the country as established by the union are also trying to promote the dialogue around sexual reproductive health education for the young people, for them to appreciate, understand their sexuality, for them to even start having knowledge about the use of contraceptives, the use of condoms and other protection measures.
Masaraure says he hopes efforts by UNICEF and UNESCO will vastly improve the well-being of the girl child in Zimbabwe and on the continent so Africa can prosper in the future. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
A court in Nairobi today suspended a police ban on protests in the Kenyan capital. Reuters News reports the court put the ban on hold while a case challenging it is being heard. Police have banned protests in the capital, Nairobi, indefinitely, citing a lack of protesters' leadership that would ensure peaceful demonstrations and alleging they have been infiltrated by criminals. The ban was announced hours before a planned protest later today, in which demonstrators were expected to call for President William Ruto to resign over alleged poor governance. Kenya has seen a month of protests sparked by a finance bill that proposed higher taxes amid a cost of living crisis and a ballooning public debt. At least 50 people have died since the protests began. Ruto has said he would not sign the finance bill. and called for dialogue with protesters to find a way forward. He also has dismissed most of his cabinet, but has said he will not resign. And the U.S. government yesterday welcomed the extension of a humanitarian truce in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo for 15 days until August the 3rd. The truce is part of efforts to end the conflict between government troops and the M23 rebels. North Kivu province has been battling the M23 insurgency for more than 2 years, as well as other militia violence. The DRC, the United Nations, and Western powers have repeatedly accused Rwanda of supporting M23 with its own troops and weapons, which Rwanda denies. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.